I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Welcome back to another Mobility Management podcast. And this is a special episode because it's the very first one of our podcasts that's part of our 20th anniversary mobility management celebration. So today I am thrilled to be joined by Rick Graver, ATP, the owner of MedTech Services Incorporated in Reno, Nevada. Rick is with us today because he wrote a column called Tools of the Trade for the very first issue of Mobility Management, published in March 2002. And in that column, Rick discussed the responsibilities that he and his team feel for serving people who use wheelchairs. So to tell you a little bit about Rick. Rick Graver graduated from the University of Nevada, Reno, with a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration. He majored in marketing and minored in economics. Rick partnered with Mike Naus to start MedTech Services in May 1988. Mike was a wheelchair repair expert who had been trained at Abbey Rents in Milwaukee after serving as a radar mechanic in the Army. Rick and Mike grew MedTech Services to include retail, rehab, and auto adaptive solutions for customers in Northern Nevada. Sadly, Mike passed away in 2001. Rick has served on the board of the Nevada Association of Medical Product Suppliers and actively participated with the DMERC Advisory Committee on the Rehab A-Team. Rick is a member of NARTS as well as an ATP. Rick, welcome to our podcast and thanks for joining us.
Lori, I am so glad to be with you and I'm so excited to do this podcast. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, I'll just say to everyone who's listening that if you are listening via our mobility management website, Rick's original column is hyperlinked in the podcast description so that you can read it on your own in its entirety. And the column is also on our mobility management website at mobilitymgmt.com. But for this podcast, Rick, what I'm going to do is read a few passages from that column 20 years ago and ask you to compare how you felt then, what you thought then, how you did business then, with how you do business today and what you think today. So as an example to get us started, Rick, the very first line of your column was, as an ATS, my goal is to provide equipment that works on many levels. Equipment must meet the daily needs of my customer, address medical needs established by physical and occupational therapists and other medical professionals, satisfy the fiscal needs of funding sources, and be available in the needed time frame. That's what you wrote 20 years ago. So let's start there. First of all, back in early 2002, we had different credentials. There was the ATS for assistive technology supplier, and ATP at that time was for assistive technology practitioner. So in other words, the clinicians. But then in 2009, ResNA changed over to a single designation, the assistive technology professional, which today applies to both clinicians and suppliers, and it can also apply as well to manufacturer personnel and other professionals who've met that ATP requirement list and passed the ATP exam. So an ongoing industry goal, I know, during the last 20 years has been to teach other healthcare providers about complex rehab and to raise the professional profile of ATP so that their expertise is better recognized and better understood. So my first question to you is, do you think other healthcare providers have maybe a better appreciation for seating and wheeled mobility today versus 20 years ago?
Well, certainly the credential adds credibility to anyone who possesses it because they have met the standard set by ResNA to become an ATP. So working with other clinicians, if they know that you have a credential like the ATP, they can feel somewhat comfortable that you've got a basic understanding and knowledge of the industry and that you've passed the ResNA certification. So for the clinicians that we work with, if they're ATPs, they understand what it is for you to be an ATP. Now, being an ATP for a clinician like a PT or an OT is different because they've already got way more training than I have. They've got masters in physical therapy or occupational therapy, and their basis of knowledge is fairly broad. But they may or may not have focus on wheeled mobility. So we have a basis of understanding that we're both ATPs or that I'm an ATP and they're a PT. And what I've always tried to do when I work with a clinician is to let them know, I need you to use your knowledge of body mechanics, range of motion, strength, all of those things, so that I can understand what your patient, our mutual patient, is, their condition is. And then my job is to try to match the medical equipment to the medical necessity. So working together, the therapist has that body mechanics experience and the ATP has the medical equipment or the solution experience. And that's always been a great team process for me.
I'd like to take you back to another excerpt from that column. As I mentioned earlier, I would like to focus mostly today on service and repair and their roles in seating and wheeled mobility. So here's what you said back in 2002. You said, keep basic tools and parts in stock. A qualified rehab provider has an inventory of parts and a factory-trained service department to respond to emergency or routine repairs. You don't do customers any favors by providing them with expensive equipment, then leaving them to fend for themselves. Many repairs are minor and can be executed with a basic set of tools. Making minor courtesy adjustments to headrests, seats, and backs reinforces that you are a professional. Having spare joysticks, modules, motors, and other interchangeable parts on hand will help you to figure out the problem and get your customer back in his chair more quickly. But know when to bring a repair in-house. If the repair requires a seat rail extractor, grinder, bench vise, or some other bulky or intricate tool, do the work in-house. Nothing is more embarrassing than taking apart a chair in front of your referral source, only to find you don't have the tools to fix it, or you can't remember how to put it back together. So, Rick, that's what you said. My question to you today is, does this advice still basically apply, or has your process changed? How has technology, I guess, impacted service?
Well, that's an excellent question. And the basic tools have remained the same, but the technology has changed. And the technology as a tool, thinking about where I was then and where I am now, the technology as a tool is very powerful. And as a matter of fact, the electronics, as you know, are a lot smarter than they used to be. Many of these, you know, joysticks and controllers, actually, they'll give a code to what the chair might think is wrong. It might be flashing lights. It might be a series of audible beeps. It could be a number of things. And sometimes it could be as simple as inquiring with someone, what exactly are you hearing or seeing? Frequently, we'll get a call from a customer with a power operated vehicle, a mobility, a scooter. And they say, well, when I turn it on, it gives five beeps or it's five flashes. And one of the things we will do is say, well, let's double check that the unit's not in freewheel. In other words, the lever got bumped or somebody moved it and forgot to put it back in drive. And for whatever reason, it was a very simple thing that could be can troubleshoot it over the phone. So those things are super helpful. And most of the manufacturers have troubleshooting guides. So the product itself has a troubleshooting guide that will tell you when it's something that maybe the motor brake is disconnected or the thing's in freewheel, one of the drive wheels is in freewheel, or to check a certain thing, those codes or beeps are in the troubleshooting guide. And the internet is a wonderful place. You can, in many cases, someone who's got access to the internet who can use Google might even be able to find their owner's manual or a troubleshooting guide for their device. And in some cases, between us and them, figure out what it is without even having to go out. That being said, one of the rules and one of the things that I learned many, many years ago, and I think it still applies today, is, 90% of the problem with power has to do with batteries. I don't know why, but, low voltage and batteries can cause all kinds of things to happen with the equipment. So batteries are one of those things that for us is a stock item in most cases. And one of the questions that we should be asking first is, you know, how long has it been since your batteries have been replaced? That, you know, there are certain things that you just ask automatically, and batteries is one of them. So, you know, back to the technology, a lot of those tools are the same. Stock parts are still the same. There are more manufacturers with more parts now than there were 20 years ago. And so it's not easy to have one of everything in stock. I can tell you from my experience and on the retail side that, for instance, with seat lift chairs. Now, I know that's not rehab, but seat lift chairs have that little pendant that you hold in your hand that you can control the seat lift chair with. So we would stock a couple of pendants and a couple of the little controllers for the various models, because if someone says their seat lift chair stopped working, if we're going to go out, we'll have a pendant and a controller to plug in. So you have that replacement part ready. And there are a lot of parts like that for wheelchairs and scooters too, but you're not typically carrying consoles or something like that. We carry batteries. And if we know it's a seat lift chair and it's a model that we've got parts for, we'll take console parts or pendants for troubleshooting. And if that's what it is, then it's a brand new part that we're stocking. You're making the repair on site. That's always a win, because then you don't have to go back and it saves the customer money.
Okay. I know when we were talking in preparation for this podcast, you said, oh my goodness, seat rail extractor. I don't even know when the last time was that I thought about an extractor, right?
Yeah. And I went back in the shop after we talked about that, and I still have one of those up on this, you know, hanging on this bench, but I couldn't tell you the last time we used it, because I'm not even sure that, well, some folding chairs, it was an E&J part from way back when, where you had to pull if you were going to change the cross brace, you had to pull the seat rail out. And in order to get the seat rail out, you had to screw this, it was like a big screw thing in there, and then turn it. And that's how you would pull the seat rail out. The design has changed too. So technology has caught up with the service part, made service easier. And these manufacturers have responded with lots of tools. You mentioned Lynx in your mobility management article, I think that I saw today.
Yes.
That Invacare has. And Lynx is not unique to Invacare, but the Lynx technology is, they call it a dongle, or it's a plug-in that you can plug into the joystick. And then with Bluetooth, you can bring the Lynx up on your smart device, your cell phone or a iPad, and actually do some diagnostic on the equipment with the Lynx and the Bluetooth and the smart pad or the iPhone. Now, that technology did not exist 20 years ago. So those kinds of things are super helpful. And I think you have to embrace technology. Now, a lot of the tools are the same. You know, we're still replacing arm pads with a Phillips head screwdriver or a electric screwdriver. We're still replacing upholstery. You're still changing tires, the old fashioned way. But many, many of these higher tech parts come with a technology component that's super, super helpful.
Well, I think you also mentioned that you came across some drive belts recently, and some of your younger employees maybe were kind of amazed that was a thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that when I think about the E&J, the Marathon was a power chair that had a drive belt system. And I think that the box itself had relays inside, so it would make this clicking noise when it was driving. And it was these relays that were kind of controlling these circuits and making the chair operate. And each wheel had its own drive belt and kind of a clutch or a lever that you would engage that would put the chair in drive. And we had drive belts for a variety of chairs. And when that technology went away, of course, we had these stock drive belts. And so they just sat up there way up high someplace in the back. And everyone's like, what are these? You know, what are these for? Is it, well, it's a drive belt for a wheelchair. Like, what are you talking about? These chairs don't have drive belts. Well, and there's only very few that do now, the really powerful ones, like the Bounder and stuff. They still use a drive belt system. But for the most part, all these chairs now have, well, they have a direct, kind of a direct drive system.
That's so interesting to hear you talk about that. And it's so funny that some of these newer guys are like, wow, I mean, that sounds a little prehistoric, I'm sure, to some of these younger folks. But what I notice is the same, frankly, talking to you today and talking to you over the years is it's always been very clear to me that service and repair work is a passion to you. It's something that's so important to you. And as an ATP and as the owner of MedTech Services, that service and repairs are things that you really pride yourself on, that they are your bread and butter. You love being known as experts and providing expert service in that. So given how technology is today, given that some of the stuff can be, like you said, it can be, you can do a little troubleshooting over the phone. What is the role then of the service and repair technician today? And can providers still distinguish themselves by offering really excellent service and repair work?
I'm not sure how someone can sell products that require maintenance and service and then not provide maintenance and service. That is foreign to me. You know, service is king, always has been. We put services in our name because service is so important. For me, I know I'm not going to buy something that I think might require maintenance or service, even just routine maintenance, anything that's going to require some little bit of technical help from somebody who doesn't have a service department or you know, service parts. I mean, I think it's crucial. I think it's critical. And I know that may not be other people's business model. There may be other ways that someone who sells that product can get away with not servicing it, you know, either through some kind of a contract, a service contract, a maintenance thing. You know, maybe you pay extra when you buy it to extend the warranty. And then it becomes a third party person who then has to be responsible for the service. And the reason I know that is we get a lot of calls for things like that. I'll get a call from a manufacturer and their end user, somehow the end user has reached them and the manufacturer is calling me and saying, can you help us diagnose this device? It's the customer got it. Maybe they bought it on the internet. Maybe they, you know, that's very common. They bought something online. They paid extra for white glove service or white glove something delivery. And that includes a benefit to them. And then when something's wrong, they call to the place that they bought it from, who then calls someone else, who then calls someone else, maybe me, maybe some other resource to try to figure out what's wrong. And the shame of it is the end user really is three or four layers deep when it comes to service. They're not dealing directly with the place that they bought it. And for me, it's a selling point. You know, if someone comes in and say, well, I just saw that machine online for, you know, whatever, minimum advertised price. And I say, well, we don't compete with the internet. You know, you've got a shop here, we've got service. And if you can assign a value to that, then service, it's value added to the customer. And they should want to pay extra. There should be a margin there for the service component. Now that's not everybody's business model. And there's certainly lots of very successful companies that all they do is push the paper and they take the phone calls. But I think the end user, if they knew that there may be a service component before they bought it, they might have thought about making sure that service was there. And I think service is key. It always has been. That part has never changed. And to be known as service really makes people comfortable. That's how we ended up. We started doing service when we started almost 34 years ago. All we did was fix flat tires and change upholstery and did bearings. And then somebody said, well, you know, what about getting a new device? We didn't sell anything new until we were servicing. Then all of a sudden people wanted to buy the new stuff too. And that's really how it started for us, was service got them in as a customer and it kept them as a customer. And then they would buy new from us because they knew we could manage the service.
Okay, so service came first for you.
For me, service came first. When Mike and I started this business almost 34 years ago, we had a limited budget. You know, we had X number of dollars to start MedTech. And I'll never forget, we contacted a man by the name of Wayne Grapes, who is still an excellent manufacturer's rep, one of the best in the industry. And we were talking to him about parts, and it would have been Everest and Jennings parts. And we had to budget a certain number of dollars to stock bearings, upholstery, arm pads, certain replacement parts. The other thing that we did that still boggles my mind is Mike said, we need a sewing machine. And I said, well, what do you mean we need a sewing machine? I think that sewing machine is like $500. He said, we have to have this. It was an upholstery type, an old Singer sewing machine. Matter of fact, we still have it. I don't even know how to use it anymore. But back then we used to use it to sew things. Like we would sew vinyl and we would go and buy upholstery by the sheet or in these rolls and actually make things with the sewing machine. So we would sew vinyl. And I used to watch Mike make covers. He could make a solid seat with J-hooks and hardware and foam. And he would sew the cover and he would measure it and sew it and put it together and use that sewing machine. So, you know, that's antiquated now. I don't know if anybody, well, I'm sure that there's still upholsters use those types of machines, but I don't know of anybody in the wheelchair business that might use them unless they're sewing belts or doing some other kind of repair work.
I love that. That's what custom seating was originally to you, though, was Mike doing those things.
Yeah, I remember we stocked the hooks, you know, the parts, J-hooks and the things. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, well, we're making a seat. I'm like, what? And he had cut the wood and laminated the foam and sewed a cover. You know, that was, and I don't know. Honestly, I don't recall. I don't think there were places making things like that then, but there might have been. It just wasn't on our radar. We were making our own.
Somehow having to make your own solution like that, even if there were some places maybe you could have, but you really didn't have a relationship with them or you didn't know who they were. So Mike's back there literally sewing custom seating, a different type of custom seating. Yeah. It just seems to me that you just develop a real appreciation and knowledge base for all these different technologies, the different postural needs and positioning needs, though, because you're not just going through a brochure and checking off the product and filling out the check, are you? You're literally like figuring out a solution. At its heart, that's kind of how Complex Rehab got started, right?
Well, and there are people that have been in Complex Rehab a lot longer than I have. So, but that's what it was for me. That was my experience. Course, we don't make anything anymore. Nothing, everything that could be made is made by someone way better than we are. And so we try not to make anything now, because it's a whole nother ball game when you're actually fabricating stuff. We don't do that. We always get parts that are provided by, you know, the manufacturer. But back then it was freewheel, you know, where the therapist would say, oh, we want to make a solid back. And he'd say, okay, what do you want to do? And he could put the T-nut in the wood and sew the cover and laminate the foam. And that was crazy. And I didn't know anything. I didn't come from that world. I didn't know the difference between a foot plate and an armrest when I started with him all those years ago. He taught me everything.
Oh, that's amazing. I still remember you telling me too when we were writing the article, like, should I put how many knives we carry on the truck? Because we're always carving foam and we're always, but I don't know how to say, should we say that we have a whole bunch of knives that we carry too? Or, but that was kind of the truth of what was going on back then. It really was a lot of thinking on your feet, wasn't it? And kind of fabricating on your feet, I guess.
Well, it's different now, and the technology has helped us a lot. You know, again, the more things change, a lot of it, the more it stays the same. We can try to put stuff together from stuff that we have to solve something. You know, sometimes it's mixing and matching parts from multiple manufacturers to end up with the final product.
Rick, I know that 7 years ago, you sold your rehab portion of the business, although today you still do provide a wide range of assistive technology from DME all the way up to complex rehab manual and power chairs. I know you work with the VA. So I did want to ask, though, how MedTech Services itself has changed in the last 20 years and the fact that you remain an independent provider. How has the role of independent providers changed over the last 20 years? And what advantages do you have by being an independent provider?
That's a fairly complex question, and it needs to be broken down, because being an independent always has meant that you can make your own decisions. And I think that won't change. We can make decisions based on, you know, what the options are. We're probably not going to have to follow we don't follow a chain of command up to some corporate level where decisions are made about purchasing. So in that respect, being an independent allows us to have flexibility in what we do, where we buy, who we buy from, where those products are available. We're not so much focused on recommended item or something like that. You know, we can still focus on the item that meets the needs of our customer, the best needs of our customer, and given their constraints, right? Funding, whether they're paying for it themselves or someone else is paying for it, funding is always a key thing. So the difference now is, because I don't have provider numbers, I don't have to worry about those kinds of restrictions in regards to fee schedules or anything like that. And being a retail provider, you know, the products that we sell are on display. So you can come into the store, you can put your hands on it, you can try it, you can drive it around, you can see the different varieties, you know, which one might work best. As an independent, we have the flexibility to order things that, you know, maybe others just don't buy. For whatever reason, it's not on their prescription or whatever their phrase is, there are certain items that they like to stick with. We have a lot more flexibility. And as an independent as well, the product that we sell isn't limited, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Last question. 20 years later, 20 years after you first became one of my mentors, and I cannot thank you enough for that. Why are you still in this profession? What still makes you happy about it? What still gets you excited about going to work? What's the best part of this job still 20 years later?
So I will never forget the first day that we went out to see a veteran, and he was laying on his back in a hospital bed and his chair was down. And we came in the door and he said, "Oh, thank God you're here. My chair's, you know, it's been down. I've been laying in this bed." And Mike got down there and he got behind that thing and he figured out he had that thing up and running. And the guy was just so thankful. He was like, "Thank you so much. I can, you know, get up now." And I left that it was probably one of the first service calls that I had gone on. I left that service call really feeling like this is something that I can do and help people for a long time. And I still get pumped up when everybody's happy, you know, like when you're smiling, they're smiling, and you've just improved their quality of life and they're on their way and they're going to go to the flea market now because they've got mobility, or they're going to go visit their family, or they're going to go on a vacation, or they're going to be able to get up around their house and, you know, get from the bedroom to the bathroom. They're going to be able to cook their own meals now, or any of those things. any of those goals that they might have where the equipment allows them to complete that makes me feel good. And I'm very, very lucky, very blessed to be in this industry. It's a very dynamic industry, and it's a hard industry too. There's a lot of, you know, family dynamics and things that happen that can make it really challenging and difficult. And there's plenty of days where, you know, I gave myself a headache and I'm on my way out there. I'm like, I gave myself a headache today. I've got to go home. But then I always come back the next day and we're ready to go. And we're always looking for, you know, something to do. And when I talk to people that work for me or people that are asking about my business, I say, one thing I guarantee you, there are no 2 days that are the same. Every day is different. And even after all these years, there are many, many days where I'm still learning something new. And I get a real kick out of that because you can never know everything. And there's always something, just always something new to learn or to hear or to find. Almost every day I could probably find something that I didn't know the day before. And so that keeps me energized.
Well, thank you, Rick. Thanks for being here today. But I also wanted to take a moment to thank you on a personal note for being one of my mentors from the very beginning. You've taught me so many things that I don't think a week goes by. And sometimes every day I remember something you told me, whether that's don't be making jokes or anything in the customs line, or you will never get past the Vancouver police to get into ISS. So, you know, be professional in the customs line, all the way to, you know, you taught me all about foot boxes too at one of those ISSs and why it's so important, what lower extremity positioning can do. And I remember you talking for half an hour to a Comfort Company engineer 1 year in the booth just about a foot box. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's these little things that are so important. So I wanted to publicly thank you for 20 years of support and for being one of our mentors, my mentors personally from the very beginning. And there aren't words to thank you enough.
Well, you know, Lori, I'm a huge fan of yours. And I do remember when we met and you were starting Mobility Management Magazine. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. This is something I'm learning today. There's actually going to be a publication that's going to be devoted to what we do. And how important is that? I mean, even then, as now, you know, those resources are critical. If you can't keep up on the tech, what's going on? In other words, you got to know what the news is in order to be fully competent in what you're doing. And so the magazines are critical for information. And you can also look at the products too. And having somebody like you devoted to our industry and taking all of that knowledge and putting it together for everybody to read and understand, and the way you disseminate the information and your passion for publishing and for our industry. And you know, you've learned along with me together. We've learned a lot of things. And so it's always been my pleasure to see you, and I will always, you know, I'll do whatever I can to help you whenever you need. And I appreciate everything you've done for me, because I would never have had a chance to write an article for a magazine. That would never have been something I could have done or would have done anywhere else. And so thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I don't even know that 20 years ago, I would have understood what a podcast would be. You know, if someone told us, hey, 20 years from now, you two will be podcasting, I wonder what we would have thought.
I was thinking about the technology back then. I think I subscribed to a company that sent me a disc. It was like a CD-ROM disc. And I would plug it into my computer and I could search catalogs with it. It had to have been before the internet was so awesome, you know, with Google and searching and all the websites and everything else, but a resource for finding product. But it was a subscription type of a disc that someone made. I can't think of what the name of that company was, but I would get this disc routinely and I would plug it in. And if somebody was looking for something, I could kind of spin this CD-ROM up and kind of search through it and find stuff. Back then, I don't think podcast was even a word. But the smart stuff, the technology, you know, it's wonderful. And I think anything that, you know, helps inform our customers and each other, there can't be anything wrong with it. It's got to be all positive, because knowledge is power. The more you know, the better you can be prepared to, you know, make decisions for yourself and make decisions to suggest things for others.
Well, thanks, Rick, so much. And with that, we'll wrap up our podcast today with Rick Graver, ATP, the owner of MedTech Services, on the topic of service and repair and what has changed in the last 20 years. Turns out that it's a lot and not so much, all at the same time. Mobility Management podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes is to subscribe, and you can also listen on our website, mobilitymgmt.com. Thank you very much for being with us, and we'll be back again soon.